now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Is this thing on? It is a Friday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Great to have you on board in whatever way you're listening. And folks chatting back and forth in the Tom Hartman chat room. Folks listening through the links at Democratic Underground or just going straight to WhiteRoseSociety.org, the source, as it were, for so much excellent progressive liberal talk radio. There's a lot of stuff to share with you tonight, and stuff I hope you'll share with me, and not the least of which was, you know, dear leader's little press conference with the Chancellor of Germany, Chancellor Merkel, in which he really sounded stupid. What's new? Yeah, I know. We got that. I've got some sound for you this evening from some of the testimony today in the Alito hearings. Well, just one of the witnesses. The NAACP came out against him. The National Lawyers Guild, Lawyers Association, the organization formed by African Americans back when the ABA was so racist it wouldn't let non-white lawyers in. They came out against Alito. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, congresswoman from South Florida, testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. And I've got some sound bites from her I want to share with you because I want you to hear what a Democrat sounds like. Now, she's also part of the 30-something Dems group that talks about real issues relevant to real Americans from time to time on the floor of the House. So you'll hear from her. And I've got the sound bites I have from Bush, I got to warn you, are long. Because sometimes you just have to get this fool in context. I mean, these are long sound bites. So, you know, I don't know, sit down, get a beer, open your pretzels, whatever. But, again, you know, usually, so often you can't get the full tenor of just what a blithering idiot he is if you've just got 2 seconds of him saying condemns. Not condoms, condemns. Condemns, dems, get it, huh? Oh, he's so clever. So there's all that, but I want to start a little closer to home. You know, we have a lot of testing for our children via No Child's Behind Left. And interestingly, someone else has picked up on the little phrase I started using a long time ago, you know, No Child's Behind Left. Our good friend Greg Pallast has penned a column, and there's the title of it, No Child's Behind Left, The Test. Now, this is Dateline New York. He says, and this was a couple of days ago. This was the 10th of January, 3 days ago. He writes, today and tomorrow, which would be the day before yesterday, and the day before yesterday. Boy, is it getting confusing yet? He writes, today and tomorrow, every 8-year-old in the state of New York will take a test. It's part of George Bush's No Child Left Behind program. The losers will be left behind to repeat the third grade. Really. And he says, try it yourself. This is from the state's actual practice test. Ready, class? This is not made up. This is not political satire, okay? This is from the New York State test. Here's the question. The year 1999 was a big one for the Williams sisters. In February, Serena won her first pro singles championship. In March, the sisters met for the first time in a tournament final. Venus won, and at doubles tennis, the Williams girls could not seem to lose that year. You remember these tests. You have to read a little blurb and then answer questions about it. Okay, here's one of the four questions that are asked based on that blurb. The story says that in 1999, the sisters could not seem to lose at doubles tennis. This probably means when they played A, two matches in one day, B, against each other, C, with two balls at once, or D, as partners. This is on a standardized test in the state of New York. Now, Greg Palast writes, okay, class, do you know the answer? By the way, I didn't cheat. There's nothing else about doubles in the text. He says, my kids go to a New York City school in which more than half the students live below the poverty line. There is no tennis court. This is real, and it shows you just how far we've fallen. For those of you of a certain age, you'll remember the early heady heyday of Saturday Night Live. Do you remember the episode of Saturday Night Live that was hosted by then UN Ambassador Andrew Young? And he did a skit with Garrett Morris that was called Black Perspective. And the complaint was that standardized testing was racially biased against black youth and economically biased against non-rich youth. And they posited the question, you have just come from a lawn party and you're headed to a black tie affair. What do you do? Do you go to the lawn party in your black tie and tux? Or do you go to the black tie affair in your lawn party attire and change at the party? Or C, do you take the A train uptown? It was hilarious. And again, it's one of those things, it's the kind of TV that we could never do in America now. But it pointed out, with obvious hilarity, the economic and social bigotry that exists in our country. This is that. That was a joke. This is reality. Asking little kids from Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy and about tennis rules. Yeah. He said, well, Greg Palast says, there are no tennis courts in the elementary schools of Bed-Stuy or East Harlem, but out in the Hamptons, every school has a tennis court. In Forest Hills, Westchester, and Long Island's North Shore, the schools have nearly as many tennis courts as the school kids have live-in maids. Now, you tell me, class, he writes, which kids are best prepared to answer the question about doubles tennis? The 8-year-olds in Harlem who've never played a set of doubles, or the kids whose mommies disappear for 2 hours every Wednesday with Enrique the tennis pro. Yeah, really. Another question from the test. Are you up for this? Most young tennis stars learn the game from coaches at private clubs. In this sentence, a club is probably A, basketball, B, tennis racket, C, tennis court, D, country club. These are real questions being asked of real live 8-year-olds in New York as part of No Child's Behind Left. Now, why am I talking about that? Well, we're beset with this kind of testing here in wild, wonderful West Virginia. And right now, our sixth grader, our daughter, is studying a unit on Roman history. And she brought home four sheets of Roman vocabulary. Now, those of you familiar with this program know that I have a bit of a passion for the classics. I had a bunch of Latin in high school and college and a bunch of ancient history and a bunch of prehistory. Look, I like it. The first, Really, not kidding. The first vocabulary word on the Roman vocabulary is patriotism. Now, this is a sheet that was made up by the teacher and given to the students, handwritten. And the first word in the vocabulary list is patriotism. Anybody want to know how my daughter's sixth grade teacher spells patriotism? Get ready. This is one of those, I hate to do this because we get enough hell here in West Virginia anyway, but might as well. Patriotism, P-A-T-R-O-I-T-I-S-M. I didn't read that wrong. P-A-T-R-O-I-T-I-S-M. Patriotism. Patriotism. By a sixth grade teacher. But that's not the half of it. I want to spend some time on this. Let's take our break first. You're welcome to call in if you've got a burr under your saddle, a bee under your bonnet. Don't keep that stuff inside, especially not with the weekend coming up. It can hurt you. The number is 877-443-2366. Make use of it. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Last week's 4th Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for 4th Estate Radio. Get the details at 4thestateradio.com. That's 4thestateradio.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
All right, 20 minutes past the hour, and we were educational issues. I thought it's Friday. We kind of need to, we've been all just Alito'd up. And by the way, with regard to Alito, did you happen to see him doing the samurai thing, leaving his wife to walk ten steps behind him, leaving the hearing room yesterday? I believe if you go to crooksandliars.com, they've got the video of it. I mean, there's no, I can't do anything for you with the show here because it's strictly visual. You know, it's like, it would be like, you know, running a building being demolished. Oh, look at the building come down. You know, it's radio. You know, and it's not the Hindenburg. Oh, the humanity. No, he just waltzed right out of the hearing room and left his wife, his poor wife, his wife who had been so heartbroken under the fierce questioning of that mean Democrat, Lindsey Graham. Just walked right by her like she didn't even exist. I mean, it was just... It's amazing to see. And, you know, how typically Republican. Let's see, a note from our listener, Karen. Karen writes, Bob, it's important to correct the impression that was left by one of your callers about the penalty for not signing up for the Medicare drug program. It's not 1% flat or 1% period. It is 1% per month for each month that you don't sign up. So after 2 years, it's a 24% penalty. Thanks, Karen. I appreciate that. That's, you know, that's one of the nice things about having a liberal progressive audience. You get smart people who can catch my screw-ups. And I, for my part, promise you that when I screw up, I'll tell you. And that's another thing you will not get with right-wing radio. Because we're liberals, because we're progressives, we realize that mistakes can be made, and we will admit them when we make them. Because that's the only way you stop screwing up. So thank you very much, Karen, for the update and the alert. Now, my daughter's Roman history vocabulary sheet. I just want to share some of these words with you. We've already talked about patriotism. Patriotism, profoundly misspelled. Another word on the list, Caesar. Appian Way. Punic Wars. Emperor. Gladiator, Pax Romana, Catacomb. Okay, I'm all right with all of this. I'm okay. Let's see. What are some of the others? Auction. Okay. Patrician, plebeian, republic, representative, senate, consul, dictator, tribune. Okay, those all make sense to me. Now remember, this is a unit on Roman history in sixth grade. So far, we've got perfectly rational, normal vocabulary words, but come on, we're all Bibled up here. You know that. Oh, we've got a telemarketer on. Put the telemarketer on the line. Put the telemarketer on. Let's let the telemarketer talk to the world. I guess she's not going to let me be mean. Anyway. No, but anyway.
Child Left Behind Act. Okay, hold on.
Hi, welcome to the program. Who am I talking to?
This is John.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing very good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Orange County, California.
Oh, wow. A nice day out there, I suppose.
Just gonna help you.
What do you, just out of curiosity, what are you selling?
I'm on a talk show.
Yeah. Hello? Oh, darn.
Aww.
Somebody caught him. Dadgummit. Well, that's kind of sad.
That's really sad. He was really excited.
Yeah, but you were nice to him. I was nice.
I've been waiting years to do this.
Well, you know, funny things happen when you work in telemarketing. You know, you get the management is never any good with the list. They give you lists that have been flogged for months and months and months. Some people getting their sixth and seventh calls, eighth calls. And you know, you're expected to sell, and, you know, no pay date. You know, you no sell, you no get paid.
Yeah, but he may go home and try to look it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a good thing.
Yeah, well, you know, we're nice people. Now, anyway, the vocabulary list. Am I ADD tonight. the Roman vocabulary. Remember, Roman, okay? Auction, I mentioned that. Pope. Pope. Pillage. Here we go, the good part of the list. Synagogue. Disciple. Persecute. Christianity. New Testament. Gospels. Apostle. And finally, Messiah. In a unit on Roman history. Now, bear in mind, the conventional wisdom has it, and the Romans themselves said that the city of Rome was founded by Romulus in 753 BC. Is that and they measured their years in something called AUC, ab urbe condita, from the founding of the city. Now, what is the point, please? What is the point in a unit on Roman history of having synagogue, disciple, persecute, gospels? You know, Cato the Elder. How about Roman history is rich. Why do we have to? Why do we have to gum it up with a bunch of religious flummery? But that's just me. Wow, this is cool. Andy is calling from the UK. Hey, Andy, you're head on. Thanks for calling the program.
Hi, how's it going? You all right?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Could be better, though. Kind of a depressing situation with the world, isn't it?
Rather, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, no, I was just... there's so many things to talk about, do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, I'm going to touch on one thing. First of all, you're in West Virginia, yeah?
That's correct.
Yeah, well, the mine thing, that's just tragic and kind of to be expected with corporations and...
Well, you know, there's a move afoot to ask the prosecutor in Upshur County where it happened, Andy, to mount a negligent homicide investigation.
Oh, perfect.
I think it's warranted, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that they had a fine. The same company had a $440 fine.
That's
for
correct.
Losing his leg.
Yeah.
And they haven't paid it?
No. They're appealing it. Understand, you know, that's the way. I don't know how it is in the UK there, but a corporation here will spend $100,000 on lawyers to stop a $400 fine.
Yeah, well, I think our law's a bit more pragmatic over here. I mean, you know, a judge over here would go pay them and pay a big fine extra. Do you know what I mean? I think our justice system is a bit separated from the judicial system still, from the whole corporate system. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
there's still a degree of separation there, but it's getting that way.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll work on that because our corporatism spreads like a virus, Andy. And I'm sorry to say it.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got Tesco's and Walmart going at it over here in the guise of Tesco's and Asda. Do you know what I mean?
So you've got Walmart's.
Oh yeah, Asda. They bought out Asda. It's one of the. It was the third.
Oh.
They bought out the third biggest, I think it was when they bought it out. It's now second, nearly. It's not going to beat Tesco's for a few years yet, and I don't. They're not allowed to do the same sort of business practice that they get away with over there because, you know, we have all the minimum wage laws.
Right.
They have the company. Every company has to donate to or contribute to the national insurance, which pays for the NHS and stuff. But
well.
I mean. That leads on to another topic. Why doesn't the U.S. have national health care? I mean,
for the life of me, Andy, I can't answer that question. It seems so self-evident. We spend, I don't know if you realize this or not, we already spend on private health care. We spend enough in this country to insure every single American and then some.
Yeah, I can believe it.
And the thing is, it's all going into the insurance executives' pockets. The executive pay over here for somebody like a CEO of an insurance company is just an abomination. I mean, average CEO pay is something on the order of 500 times that of the ordinary worker in the company.
Yeah, I can believe that. I've heard there was one that was up there 30,000 times the lowest paid worker in one corporation over there somewhere.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, it seems to be good common sense that you would have some form of universal health care. And our Democratic Party chairman, Howard Dean, talked about that when I went down and saw him a few nights ago. And, you know, he pointed out the fact that will help, you know, my God, it'll help put people to work. Toyota.
Yeah, I mean, it takes the pressure off companies. I mean, the company has to pay a small amount of tax extra, which is much less than it would have to pay on private contributions.
Absolutely.
It gets a healthy workforce.
Yeah. Among other things, Toyota, I believe it was, just bypassed the entire United States and decided to put its next series of plants in Canada. Because, again, they don't have to worry about that, yeah. that terrible cost gouge of providing health care for their workers.
Yeah, they're putting plants in Europe. They've put a couple in Britain recently because of the same sort of situation. They're paying more tax, but mm-hmm. not as much as it would cost to operate from the U.S. with health costs and other things. So. Yeah, I mean, it just seems crazy that corporations seem to be against what is in their best interest. And it kind of leads on to another thing I wanted to talk about. It's like the psychology of the whole corporate system. I mean, my girlfriend's a psychologist, so I'd kind of describe the actions of a corporation without saying it's a corporation and just say it's a person. She turns around and says sociopathic or psychopathic or psychopathic with sociopathic tendencies.
Yes.
And, you know, these are the behaviors of BP, of Enron, of, you know, pick a corporation that works worldwide, and, you know, it's pretty much that, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you wouldn't tolerate that of that kind of behavior out of an ordinary individual.
No, they get medicated and thrown in the cell.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't put up with stuff that's so blatantly dangerous. But I guess because most of it happens to poor people in Africa or poor people in the third world generally, then, you know, they can kind of get away with it, can't they?
Well, they can even get away with it if it happens to poor people right here in the U.S.
Yeah. I mean, I live in South Wales. That was destroyed by Margaret Thatcher and her mining reforms and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know, that's cool.
What was the big strike in the 80s?
Yeah.
Just about crippled the coal miners at that point in time.
No, I mean, it's destroyed. I mean, there's some places not 15, 20 miles from here. And, you know, I mean, they used to be huge, thriving industrial towns. You know, the Industrial Revolution was born in this area of Britain to a degree.
Right.
And these places, they're just full of people who have been... During the 80s, they were put onto unemployment and sick benefits, and there's a whole bunch of depressed people living in some valleys. Do you know what I mean? It's grim, man. It really is grim. I imagine it's as bad as it can be anywhere in a Western society. So, because, I mean, the cost of living is high, and we get a minimum wage, but it doesn't help anybody that's stuck, you know, 20 miles from anywhere, any jobs.
Right, and of course, a lot of my forebears are Welsh. Welsh and Scots, and you know, people came to this area that is West Virginia, Andy, from your neck of the woods, because there is a strong resemblance. I mean, there's a lot of uphill and a lot of downhill, and not a lot in between.
Right.
And so, you know, when you talk about being 20 miles from anywhere, we really know about that here.
Yeah, because it's 20 miles in a straight line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can't do any of that. No, well, you know, hey, what can you do? I guess we just got to keep fighting them and keep driving at them.
Well, certainly. I mean, you've got a better perspective than I do. What's the state of Tony Blair's continued political existence?
He should have gone, but the other two parties stuffed it up. I mean, basically, there's been the leadership election with the Conservatives, which kind of got him off the hook for a couple of months because everyone was looking at them, and now the Liberal Democrats are disemboweling themselves. And that's got him off the hook again. The biggest thing is Gordon Brown wants him to get out because Gordon Brown doesn't want a ruined economy before he gets his bid at the top job. I mean, you know, we're kind of being run by this Gordon Brown, Tony Blair, I'm in charge, but I will hand it over to you sort of conspiracy here. And,
well, I thought that was the original thinking, was that Blair was going to make way for Gordon Brown.
Yeah, well, I mean, the politically astute thing to do would have been to do the election, win the election, stay after about 6 months, you know, sort of like in a month or so ago, say, okay, I'm going to hand it over in another 6 months to Gordon Brown. Then he'd have 3 years to have another go while getting ready for another election. What I think is happening is Tony Blair doesn't care about the Labour Party, which we know because he's a Tory, conservative. So, I mean, he really doesn't care, do you know what I mean? So I think he's actually going to hang on for as long as possible just to ruin...
So you really do see Blair as a wolf in sheep's clothing?
Oh, yeah, he's a total conservative. I mean, if you take off the red tie and slap a blue one on him, then he's a Tory, do you know what I mean? I mean, just listen to the sort of difference between the sort of traditional Labour MP, you know. I mean, we have a kind of upper-class, lower-class divide here with our MPs, and most of the upper-class ones are Tories.
Sure.
And most of the lower-class ones are Labour, so you can tell by the accent most of the time, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Tony
mm-hmm.
Blair is so well-spoken. I mean, he's a lawyer, so obviously he's bad in my eyes anyway. But yeah, he's come up that way through the sort of legal end, and then saw an opportunity to hijack the Labour Party, which he did quite.
Well, Andy, I did notice that it looks like our Jack Abramoff scandal is spreading a few roots into the UK. Have you followed that at all?
Yeah, no, there's been a couple of little stories on the BBC, and there's a few things on a couple of websites and stuff, but I'm going to keep an eye on that. But I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, that guy...
Well, it turned out there's, I forget the name of it, that there's a solicitor's firm that basically worked the money angle for the huge payoffs by the Russian oil and gas interests to Tom DeLay.
Yeah, no problems. I mean, I'd be quite confident that has happened. I mean, you know, if you hear a rumor of it, it's probably true, because lawyers' firms in London are notoriously bent for the right amount of money. Do you know what I mean? Those Russians have definitely got the right amount of money.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Both pockets full of it.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, the whole situation is kind of insane, really, isn't it? I mean, I get so angry about all of this. I mean, it's like, where do you end? You've got Russians paying off corporations here and there. You've got corporations paying off politicians here and there. You've got other people standing there going, excuse me, what happened to all my money? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And just because, you know, Americans have a long fascination with the British monarchy, when you see corruption like this taking place in the UK, Andy, is it the sort of situation where the monarchy just sort of keeps its mouth shut and lets business go on?
Well, that's pretty much any situation for the monarchy. I mean, they have no real powers. I mean, I'm no royalist, but, you know, we've got a monarchy, so I think it should be useful, and I think we should write out a constitution, and the head of state should be the constitutional guardian, kind of similar to the US situation, but with no other power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Literally all they do is when a law is passed that's blatantly unjust and wrong, or when something happens that's blatantly unjust or wrong, they step in and go, oi, no, that's got to be taken to court, and or that's got to be thrown out, and, you know, that sort of thing. But at the moment, they literally can't say anything. They get given a speech. You know the Queen's speech?
Yes.
Yeah, written by the Prime Minister, so obviously written by some lawyer that works for some lobbying firm.
Exactly. But, well, let me shift gears on you again, if you don't mind, Andy. Are you following, you know, this is great having a correspondent from across the pond. I get to ask all the questions.
Well, if you need a European correspondent, I'm available.
Absolutely. Consider it done. Are you following the trial of this Hamza individual at the Old Bailey?
Interesting one, really, because, I mean, we do have freedom of speech articles, but then again, we do already have, like, they brought in a new law and stuff to try and try this guy and other people like him, sort of enticement to religious hatred, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It was already covered in another law that we had, behavior likely to cause a breach of the peace, which can get up to 25 years in prison anyway. Something like that. So I don't really understand it. They made it really difficult for themselves by letting the guy speak for so long. Because, I mean, the kind of argument was, if he's really that aggressive and saying so many bad things, how come he was allowed to speak for years?
And this guy, I mean, this guy is a hateful character.
Oh, yeah.
And you run up against this sort of thing. We see it all the time out of the religion industry fundamentalists here in this country, Andy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you've got people like Pat Robertson talking, urging the assassination of Hugo Chavez.
Yeah.
But it is in the nature of the brawl that is free speech.
Mm.
I should think that people would be rather distraught. You know, I have no sympathy for this guy. But the idea that what you just said, you're going to let this guy prattle on for, you know, literally years, and, you know, then suddenly what he said was a crime.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows the blatant hypocrisy of the Western governments that we apparently democratically elect, although I'm not too sure about our elections either, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, there's no reason why somebody else couldn't have stood at the other end of the street saying exactly the opposite. And there's no reason why he couldn't have said it inside. I mean, you know, he's evil is a bad word, but he's pretty much as close as you can get while being human. Do you know what I mean?
Well, what did he say that for a Muslim to live among Westerners was like living in a toilet?
Yeah, basically. I mean, his philosophy is if you live among Westerners, the only just, I believe were his words, way to live was to scrounge off the state, literally to scrounge off the state, because apparently Allah did that in 4th century Mecca to the pagans. They gave him charity, and then he stabbed them in the back and took Mecca as the holy city. So apparently that's kind of his aim here. But, you know, I know loads of Muslims, man. I mean, there's a shop 20 metres from my house that is run by Muslims, and 99.9% of them all think he's a joke, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Most Muslims in this country, if they even think about it, think of themselves as a British, then Muslim, do you know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Which is how it should be. We're a secular nation. What your religion is nothing to do with anyone else, really.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this guy, you know, he shouldn't be in prison for what he said. He should be laughed at in the streets, frankly.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it's just hard to justify.
Because you run the risk of sort of martyrizing him, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the worst thing in the world to turn some idiot joker who's no real threat into a martyr for someone's cause. Because, you know, he's not the dangerous one, really. He was standing there saying it, and, you know, you can film him, you can tape him, you can have people watching him. I'm sure MI5 and MI6 were watching him. I'm sure, you know, the CID and the police forces were watching him as well. But, you know, it's the people who are meeting in rooms in dark corners and stuff that are the threats. It's not some idiot who's standing on the street spouting nonsense, do you know what I mean?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I mean, part of the thing was, you got to put it in context as well. I mean, he was preaching in Brixton, and you probably don't know much about London, but that's very much like the Bronx was back in the sort of 70s and the 80s, I imagine. I mean, I don't know
depressed,
what the Bronx was like, but
poor.
Depressed, yeah, depressed, poor, mostly minorities. And so, I mean, you know, if you go into Brixton, me as a white male, I'd pretty much be on my own, do you know what
right.
I mean? Colour-wise. But when you get that many people together, you get that much poverty together, these young men, they've got nothing to do. They're angry and they've got a faith, which is possibly the most dangerous combination, isn't it?
Yes.
And so, yeah, you get people going along to idiots like that and listening to him. But I mean, I think we kind of overreact all the time to it. We give it too much press time. We give it too much attention, do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
We pay more attention to the real dangers to our society, which, on the whole, aren't guys wearing turbans wanting to blow us up, are they? Do you know what I mean?
we are beset with idiots on this side of the Atlantic as well, Andy. The idea that George Bush thinks that he's going to hear some terrorist actively talking about jihad and dirty bombs, and they're just going to carry the conversation on, even though they know the National Security Administration is listening. It's foolish.
Well, yeah, I mean, his whole argument is ridiculous. I mean, saying that, oh, you can't tell them what we do when we listen in because it might let them know what we do. Hang on a second.
True.
Right. How many films have there been
right.
that guys could have seen that show people listening into phone conversations? Even if you assume that that's not exactly how they do it,
yeah,
that's the end result. Somebody's listening to your conversation.
Well, you know, we have a real taste, whether it's Ian Fleming or Tom Clancy or Ken Follett. Yeah. We love those spy thriller things.
Yeah.
And you know, for all I know, half of their ideas come from reading those books.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I think it's true. I mean, you know, Dick Cheney and George, well, if George Bush could read, I think he'd read Tom Clancy. I'm not sure.
Nah, you know, Andy, he reads my pet goat.
Oh, yeah.
Andy,
oh, yeah.
So good to talk to you. I hope we'll hear from you again. Feel free. Thanks. Just any old time, all right?
I will do. I'll call in again. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Brilliant.
And a great evening. Bye now.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
That was exciting. And I'm just thrilled. I'm going to take a break and, you know, let Agnes apply the C-clamp to my head so it'll get back down to manageable size. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Welcome back, and thanks for sticking around a little less than 12 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. The phone number is 877-443-2366 if you want to get involved. Got something you want to say? Welcome to say it. From anywhere on the planet. Dadgum, that's cool. Email's easy, too. bob@headonradio.com. Interesting story. Just noticed, posted by one of our friends in the Tom Hartman chat room, CNN is reporting that a CIA airstrike on a building in Pakistan may have killed Osama bin Laden's most trusted aide, sources said. The building where Ayman al-Zawahiri was thought to be was in a small village near the Afghan border. You know, they're just going to love us in Pakistan. Now, this is the guy who was the Egyptian surgeon who signed on to work for Osama back when he was our best buddy fighting the Russians. Remember that? That Reagan backed him. We backed him. We sold it. We taught him to do everything that he turned around and wants to do to us. Sure. And then, of course, the third paragraph of the story. There's been no confirmation that Zawahiri was killed in the attack, but sources say there was intelligence suggesting he was in the building at the time of the strike. Bring me the head. I'm sorry. You know, what do we get? Every time. I mean, we've seen it time and time again to the point that it almost becomes laughable. Every time it gets a little bit nasty for the Bushistas. Al-Qaeda number 3 killed. Al-Qaeda number two killed. How many times have we caught or killed Al-Qaeda number two? Yeah, that's a hell of a rank structure. I mean, I guess everything just moved. Well, he's number two now. So, am I skeptical? Hell yes, I'm skeptical. Now, Dear Leader was in conference today. He had an Oval Office visit from the new German Chancellor, Frau Merkel. And like I said at the beginning of the program, these are some rather lengthy sound bites, and I beg your indulgence on these simply because, like I said, you've got to get context on this boob. And if you don't, just rambling, babbling, you know, make the kind of thing that makes you wonder, is this guy on the same planet as me? So let's get started. This is what passes for a press conference by the leader of the United States in the first part of the 21st century. Get the aspirin out. Get the goodies, headache powders. This is pitiful.
And another question is, in Germany, there's a discussion about intelligence, secret service people working in Baghdad during the Iraq War. From your knowledge, did the German intelligence help the U.S. before and during the Iraq War in Baghdad?
I have no idea about the latter.
I have no idea.
You did say secret intelligence, right? No. I understand. Truth of the matter is, Chancellor brought this up this morning. I had no idea what she was talking about.
Yeah, she's talking that German language.
This morning. Truthfully.
Yeah, she's talking that Dutch, truthfully. She brought it up this morning. I had no idea what she's talking about. Now, wait a minute, okay? Do you get the gist of the question, right? This is all about the assertion that German intelligence on the ground in Iraq helped us at the beginning stages of the war. And President Doofus, I have no idea. Truthfully, when you're talking to somebody and they feel at the end of everything they say to you, truthfully, do you generally get the idea that you are being lied to? I mean, there's a whole psychological thing cooking underneath that where, you know, when you've got to hang through, no, really, sincerely, when you've got to, you see? So, truthfully. But how many, what? In this, the show now and in its previous incarnation, how long have we been talking about Curveball? Remember Curveball? Curveball was the drunked-up Iraqi who was living under the bridge drinking the screw-top wine over there on the Euphrates or the Tigris or something and feeding information to Ahmed Chalabi, who was telling his nephew, who was telling Judy Miller at the New York Times, who was telling America that, you know, Saddam had Winnebago-style mobile biological weapons labs. You remember all that crap? Sure you do. You remember the news story that said Curveball's German handlers warned the CIA that they didn't believe that Curveball was you know, really anybody you'd want to put a lot of stock in because they thought he'd pretty much gone around the bend? You know, got the big bottle of Wild Irish Rose there, you know, unscrewing.
Over there, behind that palm tree, I see some aluminum tubes, and they're for centrifuge. Really. Call the Germans.
And, you know, the Germans are nobody to screw around with. You know, they're peaceful right now, and they have been for, you know, a half a decade or so. A half a century or so. When you get a call from German intelligence telling you, we do not believe this Curveball is to be trusted anymore. His information is suspect. When you get that phone call, you don't go to the UN on Curveball's information, which is precisely what Colin Powell did. Colin Powell, you remember the speech. My friends, this is not speculation. This is based on hard evidence. Saddam has several tanks of helium, and he is prepared to make the entire world talk funny. I'm not kidding here. He's dangerous. And the yellow cake and the aluminum... And dumb leader says, I have no idea. What in the hell are you doing for the last 5 years, George? Oh, why do I ask? I have no idea. Truthfully. Merkel. That's a funny name. Yeah, she said lots of stuff to me in the Oval Office. I ain't got a damned idea. I don't speak that Dutch. I speak Spanish. Oh, yeah, I got a bunch more of this stuff. I mean, this is high comedy. We may start running some bits from a wonderful liberal comic group in the near future. And it's good stuff, too. It's really funny. But you know what? The best comic in the world couldn't write this crap that Bush says. Because if you put it out there as comedy, or if you put it out there as part of a miniseries or something, you'd get if you pitched it to a studio exec, you would get bounced in a minute because they'd look at you and go, the American people would never elect a person so damn stupid as the character that you've written. And we've got him. And unless something happens fairly quickly, we've got him till January the 21st. Jesus God, 2009. Yeah. My lovely wife just went, one of those full body shivers just.
Skunk just walked across my grave.
Yeah, I know. So stick around for that. We're going to take our top of the hour break. Again, wear the phones out if you want to. This is your last chance for a couple of days. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, Head On. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff.
48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
When I was a kid, Uncle Remus, he put me to bed. With a picture of Stonewall Jackson above my head. Then Daddy came in to kiss his little man, with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand. He talked about honor and things I should know. Then he'd stagger a little as he went out the door. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess. We're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? When nothing makes a sound in the night like the wind does, but you ain't afraid if you're washed in the blood. Like I was. Smell of Cape jasmine through the window screen. John R. and the Wolfman kept me company. By the light of the radio by my bed, with Thomas Wolfe whispering in my head. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak tree. Those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? In school, I ran with a kid down the street, and I watched him burn himself up on bourbon and speed. But I was smarter than most, and I could choose, learn to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. When I was 18, Lord, I hit the road. But it really doesn't matter how far I go. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me?
she feels better than ever, and we're on fire, making our way back from Mars. 15, there's still time for you, time to buy and time to lose. 15, there's never a wish better than this, when you only got a 100 years to live.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, so the news conference with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Merkel, I think. Had as its centerpiece three basic topics. A, what we talked about, the fact that the president clueless doesn't know, never heard nothing about no German helper intelligence in Baghdad before the war. Truthfully. So and then it moved on to this issue of Iran. And as our good friend Jim in New York writes, I think the idiot might nuke Iran. This is out of control, and the Democrats don't have the guts to filibuster Alito. How do I get off this chicken planet? Yeah, rockets are now boarding. I know you, and I share your pain, Jim. Truly, I do. It's frustrating as hell, isn't it? To feel this powerless. Of course, we're not powerless. You know, if we wanted to, we could have a couple of million people surrounding the White House, demanding that the man just leave. We could do that, if we cared, or if that leader that our friend Zach was talking about last night would materialize. A couple of million people, get out now, George, and it's done. It could happen. Not talking about armed uprisings. I'm not talking about anything dangerous. Peaceful protest. You know, Martin Luther King stuff. Speaking of which, the official MLK holiday is Monday. I will not be taking the night off. I will be here. And that is not out of any lack of respect. In fact, it is born out of a profound respect. I don't think Dr. King would mind if maybe we shared some of his writings. Maybe if you want to, a few callers could read from some of his speeches. Maybe we'll find some sound bites. And maybe in listening and pondering his words, we'll remember what it was like to have that leader, to have someone who would fight. Because you got to remember when Dr. King went to Memphis, where he was assassinated, and you know this, he wasn't going over a race issue. Wasn't this the sanitation workers' strike? He was supporting working people. He was supporting organized labor. His was a colorless vision. We talk about a colorless society. He started where the work most desperately needed to be done. But his vision included a long struggle for all people of any color. So we will be here Monday night. I hope you'll be able to join us. Yes, dear.
This is also Black History Month.
No, that's next month.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. That falls in February. Yeah, I remember it because I talked about it last year. Black History Month is the shortest month in the year. And, yeah, there's meaning in that.
Okay, school's caught up with it then because they're doing the reports now. And we were talking about slavery. And I was telling our children that there has been one form of slavery or another for millennia.
Yeah.
And we were trying to explain to them how it continues in different forms, but it still continues. So everybody needs to band together and keep that from happening again.
Okay, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I don't know. Lord, I'm easily distracted tonight.
Sorry.
That's okay, dear. No, getting back to dear leader in his press conference, you deserve to hear this stuff. And again, they're long cuts. But again, it's about, you know, there was a discussion about China possibly interfering with a reference of Iran to the United Nations Security Council. And, well, let's start there. Here we go. Now, Bush Brilliance.
One of the things friends do is they spend time discussing strategies.
Friends.
Before we make a common statement about what next ought to happen. And we spent a fair amount of time today. Mm-hmm. And I know Condoleezza Rice has spent a fair amount of time with the current government about strategizing. How best to achieve the objective. That's what we want to do. We want an end result to be acceptable, which will yield peace, which is that the Iranians not have a nuclear weapon in which to blackmail and or threaten the world. I want to remind you that the current president of Iran has announced that the destruction of Israel is an important part of their agenda. And that's unacceptable. And the development of a nuclear weapon, seems like to me, would make them a step closer to achieving that objective. And we have an obligation, in order to keep the peace, to work together to achieve the objective that we're trying to achieve through the current diplomatic process. I don't know if you want to add to that brilliance or not.
This guy knows he's an idiot, doesn't he? First of all, my poor grandmother, 60 years teaching in the Fayette County, West Virginia school system, is rolling in her grave right now. Any show of hands, does anybody even want to attempt to diagram what that man said? And, it's important for friends to be friendly, and, of course, what friends do best is strategizing. He said strategizing. Yes, he did. I don't know if you want to add to that brilliance. He is clueless. I mean, let's just take a moment here, and then, you know, you're welcome to chime in if you think I'm wrong. Or if you think I'm right, you know. My ego is what it is. He's talking about this risk of Iran getting a nuclear device. First of all, Iran says all along, you know, one, they're not stupid. So, yes, we intend to develop a nuclear weapon. And the minute we get it hooked up, we're dropping it on Tel Aviv. Nah, they're not that dumb. Not dumb at all. But they say they want nuclear power, you can understand that, can't you? You got all this oil, you want them, and it's finite. They know it's finite, and they want to sell it, and they want to make money off of it. They don't want to be. You don't eat your seed corn. You know, they'll use the nuclear power to power up Iran, and they'll sell the rest of the world the heroin. Oil, I mean. Yeah, did you understand? Not defending, but... I mean, I think they're stupid for wanting nuclear power. But they want a nuclear bomb. If you follow dear idiot's logic, they want a nuclear bomb because Israel has several... And Israel has shown a willingness to attack its neighbors. Just kind of zoomed over and bombed Iraq one day in the 80s. And rattling sabers and doing everything they can. And please, 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 no, I don't want any of the Bob, you're an anti-Semite stuff. I absolutely am not. But Israel will manipulate the entire world to achieve its aims. We're in Iraq, partly on account of Israel, and the Israelis admit it. we get dragged around like a little red wagon. Because, in large part, of people like Pat Robertson, they must defend Israel. Israel cannot be divided or your prime minister will have a stroke. Oh, God, why'd I say that? Now they won't let me build Jesus land on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Oh, Jesus. But Iran wants a nuclear weapon because Israel has nuclear weapons. That's the thing with nuclear weapons. You know, India had a nuclear weapon. Pakistan had to have a nuclear weapon. It is mutually assured destruction, and it is the principle of deterrence. Iran has nothing that will stop Israel from nuking them. Now, all the hateful rhetoric about wiping them off the map and driving them into the sea, that's stupid. That's dumb, it's mean, and it sounds like something Pat Robertson would say about some other, any country but Israel. You know, Pat Robertson talks about nuking the State Department in Foggy Bottom. But that's why they, if they indeed want a nuclear device, that's why they want it. And, you know, dear leader, Iran having a nuclear device is unacceptable. You know, because only white people can have nuclear devices. And nuclear devices can only be used by white people on people who aren't white. Okay? And it's a racist nation. It's okay. We can admit it. Some of us would like to work on that. Some of us would like to just stick our heads in the sand and say, no, we're not racist. No, heck no. Boy! But is that how absolutely sprayed roach crazy decon party insane do you have to be if you've got a nuclear device to, you know, you got two or three nukes and you're going to use them in a first strike? If Iran used a nuclear device against Israel, the entire Middle East would be turned into glass. Wouldn't it? Let's take a break. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Happy Friday, guys.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write... Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On last week's Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member. Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay, he was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy. Well, maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting. Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close and try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Welcome back. Let's go straight to the phone. Jim's been waiting, and I hate to make people wait. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello.
How do you do?
And how are you this evening?
Doing well. Yourself?
Reasonably well. Anticipating snow tomorrow.
So they say, and some considerable amount of it, possibly.
1 to 3, maybe. Who knows? Listen, third things first.
Okay.
That most recent thing about George Michael. And I guess they referred to his experience in the tea room.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that, like in that movie Flesh Gordon, that Emperor Wang somewhere on the planet Porno is bombarding the Earth with these sex rays or something. Because, I mean, MSNBC has been setting people up on the Internet, and they're having these grown-ups contact people who they think are adolescents. Boys mm-hmm. and girls, 13, 15.
Really?
And they have assignations, and they show up, except when the person shows up at the given address, they're met with TV cameras, thinking they're going to run into a 13 or a 15-year-old pubescent. They run into some guy from MSNBC, and on the outer perimeter of the property are men from the sheriff's department. And they've done it on the East Coast a couple of months ago and now on the West Coast. And the people that are showing up are teachers, rabbis, even employees.
Southern Baptist ministers?
People, and Homeland Security, too. Agents of Homeland Security, among others. In other words, these are just not what you would consider to be perverts or whatever who might ooze from the primeval slime of some gutter, but these are like, alleged pillars of the community. And they make these dates with these kids, 40-year-old people.
Well, is that valid?
Have sex with
is
them.
That valid journalism, Jim?
Pardon me?
Do you think that, is that valid journalism?
Yeah, I think it's quite valid. I saw it on television. I saw the people come in there. One man.
No. I'm not asking you. Is it real? I'm asking. Is partnering with law enforcement a valid use of journalism?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. When you have grown men sending 13-year-old girls pictures of their genitalia, and then inviting them for a tryst, I think somebody needs to take care of this guy. Don't you?
Well,
whatever means, as far as I'm concerned. As far as this type of activity is concerned, the end justifies the means. And these people just come in there, and now this very guy who had done this came in, and when they asked him and surprised him with TV cameras, he said he was trying to teach the young lady a lesson in tough love of what could happen to her for responding to someone who would send pictures of their genitalia over the Internet. One guy appeared on some guy's carport stark naked with a six-pack of beer. It showed him.
Oh, my God. What program was this, Jim?
It was on MSNBC this morning. Right after Don Imus.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, like I say, Emperor Wang must be on the planet Porno bombarding the Earth with some type of sex ray. I don't know. You know, explanation for it. You saw that movie Flash Gordon, I'm sure, years ago.
Not me. I was in church.
I bet. Speaking of which, you were going with somewhere with this business about words from your daughter's vocabulary.
Yeah, that somehow just didn't.
Interrupted by the call from the United Kingdom.
Well, I wouldn't call it an interruption, but this thing just really didn't get legs, I guess. But we were helping our daughter with her homework last night and making sure it was done and stuff. And I'm looking at the Roman history vocabulary.
Uh-huh.
And words like synagogue, disciple, persecute, Christianity, New Testament, Gospels, apostle, Messiah.
Well, the two are so intertwined.
But no, Messiah is a Greek word that has roots in Aramaic and ancient Hebrew. There's nothing Roman about it.
Oh, yeah, but it certainly had an impact on the Roman Empire, that's for sure. And they were very concerned about it.
I mean, we've got something on the order of 1,000 years of Roman history with no Christianity in it whatsoever. You want to study Rome? Study that.
If you were the procurator of Judea, or if you were sent by Tiberius or one of the other Julio-Claudians to govern the province of Judea, you would be quite familiar with the term Messiah.
Well, messianism, sure.
People believe that the point deliver them from Rome.
But Jim, the point is that this is another sleazy attempt to insinuate religious doctrine into the public schools.
I see this history.
No, disciple history. Vocabulary. This is the study of the Roman Empire.
And of course,
and disciple is a vocabulary word for a sixth grader studying the Roman Empire?
I see no problem with that, because listen, the very organization of my church is based on the organization of the Roman Empire itself.
That's fine. No problem. Why does my daughter have to learn?
They're not teaching her creationism.
Why does my daughter have to learn ecclesiastical hierarchy in sixth grade?
I don't think that's ecclesiastical hierarchy, Bob.
Sure it is.
No, it isn't, because she's going to be exposed to that anywhere. But as far as, and you know, as you yourself said, you are living in the Bible Belt, and this area of the country is very pro-religious and sort of anti-secular. But nonetheless, these words were used in conjunction with the period of history in which Rome was the ruler of the world, in which, of course, Christianity had its beginnings. And it was under the persecution of Rome that many Christians were persecuted, and they were hounded catacombs, and then
fine.
They were martyred in the Colosseum. And
Jim, why does my sixth-grade daughter have to learn persecute?
I think persecute.
Within the context
I
of...
I think persecute. I think she should, because you could be persecuted for being a lot of other things than just being a Christian.
But we've talked at length on this program about how the right-wing religion industry, one of its favorite cards to play, they played it last Sunday at Sunday Justice Sunday, is that they are being persecuted.
Well, I don't know about that.
This is creeping fundamentalism in the schools,
you
pure
know,
and simple.
I'm going to tell you something. As far as being persecuted is concerned, people don't know the real meaning of the word persecution. Most of you
don't.
That's what I
said the other night. Persecution is when you get a fence post rammed up inside you and you're covered in olive oil and lit for a torch on the Appian Way. That's persecution.
Persecution to me is, for example, having a cross burned in front of your house, the way they used to burn crosses in front of my parents' house in the 50s.
Sure it is.
Or having faggots sprayed on somebody's front garage and they can't even spell the word faggot right. That's persecution.
Sure.
And if these people want to feel like they're persecuted, well, they have a right to feel that way. But I don't think that your daughter is being taught persecute in this particular thing unless she's going to some type of religious or parochial school.
No, this is a public school, and I'm sorry. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Roman history. You know, I had four years of Latin in high school, and I didn't have to learn about Pope number one. We didn't read any Vulgate Bible. We read Tacitus. We read Horace. We read Livy.
Where did you grow up?
Alabama.
You wouldn't be likely to learn too much about the Catholic Church in Alabama, would you?
Sure.
I don't think so.
We had a huge Catholic community where I grew up. Two of them, as a matter of fact.
Okay. But as far as my
Latin teacher herself was as Roman Catholic as a human being can get. But she used to say, no, we're going to, I mean, and this was her position, we are going to read real Latin. We're not going to read that Vulgate stuff, because it's just like Koine Greek. Koine Greek, the Greek of the New Testament.
You talk about church Latin.
Yeah, church Latin and Koine Greek are, Koine is frankly gutter Greek. It's not classical Greek. It's not grammatically correct within ancient Greek structure.
Well,
and the same thing applies in large part to church Latin. So, you know, the point here is it's not necessary.
It was the church who kept Latin alive.
Sure, it did.
And
you know, the Latin evolved in
classical Latin.
Latin evolved
not
in
Opian Latin.
You're wrong on that point, Jim. Because in large part, it was the Arabs who kept classical Latin alive. Absolutely. That's where we got most of our classical texts after the burning of the library at Alexandria, was through Muslim scholarship. Absolutely. You know, the street Latin evolved into Italian and Romanian and French and Spanish and Portuguese.
And when was the library at Alexandria burned? 33 B.C.?
No. It wasn't 30. No, it was A.D.,
No, I think it was before Christ.
No, it wasn't, because there were alleged to be Christians involved in the burning.
No. This happened when Julius Caesar went into Alexandria to conquer the city.
No. I know my Caesar. That was not when the library at Alexandria was burned.
It was.
No, Jim, I'm sorry, it wasn't.
Well, I'm afraid you better reread your history, friend, because I know what I'm talking about.
Well, in this instance, I do believe you're wrong.
Well, I don't think you're right.
I'm sure somebody will let us know. But the point here is,
Ptolemy was on the throne, and that was Cleopatra when this happened, when the Alexandria lighthouse was burned.
Well, I'll find out if I'm, you know, and if I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. But I do believe it was in the.
But I mean, I would like to know, even say if somewhere during the Common Era when it burned. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When would the Muslims have come up and absorbed classical Latin? I mean, they did have contact with Rome.
Yes, they did.
The days of the empire, because Rome traded everywhere. I mean, they traded, even Roman tables were supplied with delicacies and things like that, which came from, you know, even India, places as far away as that, and, you know, other places. So, I mean, it pretty much bestrode the world like a colossus.
Well,
but it's my understanding that the Roman Church, the Catholic Church, and the monasteries, and in their places in which this is after Rome fell, they kept the lamp of learning alive.
Well, that's
to a certain extent. They did.
To a certain extent. They also extinguished
not to a great extent, Jim.
Where science was concerned, they extinguished it for all they were worth. In favor of power and control and superstition.
Well, they did have their problems with they promoted Aristotelian and theories about celestial mechanics and things like that. And yes, you're right, but I'm talking about the actual manuscripts and the grammar and things like that. Those were kept alive in large part due to the efforts of the church.
Well, I understand that. Now, I'm looking here. It appears that the Museion, which was part of the Library of Alexandria, existed until about 400 A.D.
Part of the library. Not all the library was consumed. But a part of it was, and with it was consumed priceless things. And it was part of the Roman strategy, because it was part of the royal enclosure of Alexandria. It was part of the royal enclosure right on the coast. It's not even on where the library originally stood, Bob. It's underwater now.
Yes, as was Cleopatra's palace and all of that. Hey, Jim, we've got to hit our break. Take care. Let's see. Yeah, let's do that. What have I got? Well, there it went. I'll look at it during the break, and we'll sort this bit of trivia out just once and for all. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to three lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. It's been said that Mr. Bush is the first CEO president, and this observer agrees. Like a CEO, Mr. Bush and his administration prefer to operate in secrecy, have little concern for how their company actually works, and even less concern for the welfare of their customers. It's a top-down mindset where loyalty to the executives is more important than loyalty to the company, though as they see it, the executives are the company. That's why you hear all this rhetoric about how anyone who opposes Mr. Bush and his policies opposes America. Of course, being an elected official in a democratic republic is not the same as being a corporate executive. You can't fire a senator or a congressman, and the laws regarding your behavior are a lot stricter than they are in the business world. To the current administration, however, these are just obstacles. Instead of firing an elected official, they find ways to intimidate or marginalize them. If you need to lie, cheat, or even break the law to get something done, you just do it and worry about the consequences later. As anyone who's ever worked in a big company knows, this is standard operating procedure. What's important to understand about everything that's going on is that the current administration is just a front for corporate interests who want to remake the federal government into a tool to serve their own interests rather than the interests of the citizens from whom governmental power theoretically derives. And while they're stealing our government, they're stealing our money as well. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Welcome back. That was an odd little tangent. The point is, and there's a lot more stuff to talk about. I got more sound bites from George Bush that you got to hear. The point though is that whether it's here in West Virginia or Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, there are the creeping fundamentalism will not stop trying to worm its way into the schools. And destroy learning. You know, and again, this is the kind of thing that has gone on. Destroy learning. Destroy reason. Destroy rationale. Destroy common sense. In favor of a particularly virulent brand of religious superstition. And, you know, I would remind you that when we see these fundamentalist religion industry people trying to pimp their version of their received wisdom in the schools, it means that they know that they're failing in the churches. So maybe it's cause for hope, but it is certainly cause to remain on guard against it. And consequently, when I see my daughter having to do definitions in Roman history class, when you've got 1,000 years of Roman history before you ever start hearing words like disciple and apostle, when I see persecute and I see apostle and disciple on the vocabulary list, I know creeping fundamentalism when I see it. Let's go to the phones. David's with us. Hey, David, you're head on. Yo, David.
Bob, I think you're being way too harsh on that very invigorated, caring, sensitive teacher that gave your daughter that list. I want you to realize that teacher won a toaster for injecting fundamentalism. She got back to her Wednesday night prayer meeting, and she won a toaster amongst her peer group because she had been able to do that.
I don't doubt it. I mean, that's funny, but I didn't. No, I'm sure that there are some that are that way. You know, see if you can bring Jesus to the light of the heathen children in the schools.
And whether it, Bob, whether it's that fundamentalism or it's a updated version of the poll tax and literacy test when black voters were given a Chinese laundry bill in Alabama and requested to read it, asking kids from the Bronx to discuss the relative merits of doubles tennis. Many of your callers have reminded all the other callers, George Bush and the neocons do not want a Jeffersonian-type educated populace. They don't want thought. They prefer ignorance such that the megaphone and all the rest of it can cause them to vote and react the way they want.
you know, what was it? Oh, let me just push the button on the wackos and they'll go the way we want them to go.
Yep.
But there is a deeper question.
Okay.
And I have to ask this.
Sure.
Based on the pursuit and the plumbing of the depths of the classics, I've got a history question.
Okay.
Based on his receipt of a fat-ass hog, what year did Flatulatalus invent barbecue? The emperor.
Oh, God, I got set up.
Okay.
I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be wrong. I got another answer. I got another answer.
I'm sorry. And it was petty, and it was mean-spirited, and I couldn't resist. And I'll, you know, my seat where I know I'm going to go just got a few degrees warm.
No, never.
But I do have a serious question.
Okay.
How is it? Why is it? What's the underlying, you know, what's the DOS? What's the underlying operating system? You know, Windows has icons, but I'm sorry. When you get far enough down, it's still DOS. What is it about the Republicans that they want to create an omnipotent, imperial, can't be challenged, do anything he wants to do, king of a president? Bob, I'm convinced that they think they'll never be out of office. Whether it's
bad. Well, they've done everything in their power, David, to make sure that they're not. From black box voting.
Exactly.
To the K Street project. They started working in 1994 on the notion that they were never going to give up power, even if they were voted out of office.
They would never be building these incredible manipulations, corruptions. What's the right noun for defile?
Defilement.
I think so. Of the office of president that they have put upon this, you know, that they're trying to pull off. There's no way for them to want to do this unless they are convinced they'll never, ever, ever be out of office.
Well, they've got to make sure that they're never out of office because they know that they are toast if they are. They know that there's going to be a long parade into the federal prison system if they ever get tossed out of office. You know, Bob Ney in Ohio is a classic case in point. I just got an article from our friend Brad Friedman at bradblog.com. And breaking news, he says, the House leadership is forcing Bob Ney out of his chairmanship of the powerful the House Administration Committee.
Just a snake changing the skin. There'll be another one come right behind him. If this blunt guy comes in, there are a few thinking Republicans that might not be as dirty, might not be as corrupt. There's a few of them are saying, for God's sakes, Mr. Hastert, skip a generation. If, what's his name, Binky, Bunkley, Boobly?
Yeah.
Or Mr. Blunt, you know, if either one of those go in, it's delay light. They've got to skip a generation if they're going to salvage any credibility. I hope they don't. I hope Blunt goes in to replace Delay because he's as tied to all of that as Ney.
Oh, he's a sleazy. I mean, do you remember when the little right wing nuts hopped up and down and squealed and screamed their monkey language about Hillary's little investment thing in the futures market? Do you remember that whole affair?
Oh, vividly.
Bob Ney made a $100 bet in a London casino and won $34,000 on it, just in time to pay off a $30,000 credit card debt.
Now, wait a minute. Catch me up on that.
I thought you'd enjoy that. He's in a casino.
Yeah.
And he makes a $100 bet. He wins $34,000, and it's just in time to pay off his $30,000 credit card bill.
Well, how again was it that he won it? It was based on the fact that there would or there would not be a Hillary prosecution or whatever?
I don't know. I don't know what the bet was. But, you know, he was there on a lobbyist had paid for him to take a vacation there.
Now I'm kidding. Oh, I thought it was a legit.
No. But I mean, if you remember the howling about Hillary's futures investment, and this guy's gambling on lobbyist paid vacations, and just miraculously wins a $100 bet that clears a $30K credit card bill.
Now I catch on. Yes, I remember the Hillary flap, but I'm sorry, I wasn't paying enough.
No, that's okay. I probably communicated it poorly. But David, now you talk about the imperial presidency. Since I've got you on the line, and I enjoy your thoughts, I want you to hear this is more of this press conference today with Dear Leader, and I love sharing them with folks when I've actually got them on the phone, because it's that there's a certain nuanced reality to actually hearing someone else hear it if they haven't heard it before. I want you to hear him talking about this business of China and Iran. Okay. More brilliancy.
Thank you, sir. If I could just follow up on that, China's UN ambassador says referring Iran to the Security Council might complicate the issue. How hard is it going to be to get it?
Say that again, Steve. China's ambassador said what?
It might complicate the issue if you refer.
The little box on his back isn't working.
Yes, sir. Okay. How hard is it going to be to? What's your timetable? Should the sanctions include the threat of military force?
Yeah. First of all, I want to repeat what I said before. We should not prejudge the strategy in the Security Council until they get to the Security Council. What we're doing now is beginning to lay out the strategy of what happens in the Security Council. That's what friends do. We consult, we talk. We strategize as to how to achieve an important objective, which is not allowing for Iran not to have a nuclear weapons.
You get that?
So there's going to be a consultancy to create the brilliancy to avoid the atomacy of the nuclear. I understand completely.
This guy is laying the groundwork for nuking Iran.
I was being frivolous, but yes, he is. That's the only, if any of us have any background in the military, short of figuring out a way to dig a Suez Canal to Iran and use our Navy, which ain't going to happen, or a nuke, that's all we have left. Our Army is tired and becoming more tired. Our veterans are sick and wounded and dispirited and becoming more so. And kids don't care about $20,000 to lose an arm and be ruined for life, because the information is accelerating tremendously at home, even in poor neighborhoods. You know, that's not a bargain. That green suit and going over there, that's not a bargain.
Wait a minute. There we go. Sorry about that. No, there's no bargain involved with it. David, this man is insane, and this is the guy that they want to make imperial. They want to confer imperial powers on this man.
And if he does that, I don't care that the Europeans justifiably are concerned if Iran becomes more invigorated, more interested, more aware, more concerned. They had 5 or 10 times the ability to work with any atomic science, any nuke. They had so much more of that than Iraq had, in the last 5 to 8 years. And Europe knew that.
Well, you know, say Iran, for the sake of argument, David, Iran builds themselves 6, maybe a dozen nuclear devices.
How far can they send them?
Assume for a moment that they can develop an ICBM that can reach us.
That's going to take longer than making the bomb, very honestly, I believe.
Sure it will. And the other part of it is, assuming all of that, is this just more xenophobia and more racism? Do we just think that they're stinking crazy and that they would be fool enough to launch a nuclear attack against a nation that could literally turn their entire country to glass?
Men like George W. Bush and the people that have created him know that they have to have a red-hot them they create in America, not the real American citizen. It's the lowercase us that they want to create. They know they have to have a hot button them for us to focus on. There's got to be a boogeyman, and now it's Iran. All we know now is that Iraq is this horrible place that if we were to leave, declare victory as we did in Vietnam, and watch out now, Agnes, there comes one. As the Vietnam veterans used to say, unass the area.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be clear of 90% of the misery that befalls us because of that involvement. Who's the boogeyman if we get out of Iraq? Oops! America.
Well, but that's that's the point, David. We know, I mean, and this is the reason, you know, I'm sure the little cons are going, yeah, we wouldn't never nuke Iran. That's all we can do. We don't have the troop strength to go in there militarily. The only hope that Bush has is that he can con Europe into a military nightmare with Iran. And I frankly don't think that Europe's going to be conned. I mean, Angela Merkel, this new German chancellor, she specifically asked Bush to shut down Guantanamo, and he told her to shut the hell up.
And in her country, she is so close to Bush by their standards that was the biggest impediment to her being elected. I saw an image in a German election campaign parade. That was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I think I've got time to describe this accurately. In a short campaign that centers on issues, centers on speeches, centers on not necessarily billions of dollars spent on television, there was a parade in a major German city, and it was the party that was not the new Prime Minister Merkel's party. There was an Uncle Sam in an elbow and knee position, with his head turned, smiling toward the crowd, but his keister hoisted up in the air, and out of his rear end was issuing Ms. Merkel, waving one American flag and an East German flag.
Ooh.
Now, I printed that off, and I kept it, and I thought, now, that's politics that I can understand. Somebody had 8,000 pounds of paper mache with which to make something that cool. That's what Germany thinks of her. She comes here and he dumps on her.
Yeah.
That's how far apart from the rest of the world we are. If George Bush decides to drop a big one on Iran, he doesn't care what France thing.
No, and you know when it
might as well be Luxembourg.
But when the German chancellor looks at you and says, you know a little bit about this concentration camp thing, you know, maybe you might want to close yours down. It's not going to be good for you in the long run.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Won't work out in the long run. Trust me on this one.
I know. David, we do have to take the break. Thanks so much for all your comments and your trenchant observations.
Thanks for letting me get away with it.
And who was that emperor? Flatulatulus the first?
Second, actually.
Oh, okay. Flatulatulus the second. Take care, David.
I know I'll pay for that later.
We all will. See ya.
Good night, Bob.
Bye now. Okay. And I've gotten several emails from several different listeners. There is no final opinion as to just who burned the library at Alexandria, or who flung dung, for that matter. It ranges in from Julius Caesar through an early Christian freak to an early Muslim freak. Somebody burned it, but it was in existence some portion of it up until roughly the 4th century. Let's take our break. When we come back, your phone calls, if you're so inspired, or we could listen to his dear leader's description of Angela Merkel. Oh, it'll make you proud to be an American, I promise. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Bangkok, Oriental sitting in the city, don't know what the city is getting. The creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with everything but Yul Brynner. Had the chess bars in it. All change. Don't you know that when you play it?
Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting. Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, get a backbone, for God's sake. Stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, let's get back after it. I don't know. Some nights you have those shows where you just want to huddle. You know, after it's over, you put the archive on to air check yourself, and you crawl into a little corner and just sort of weep and keen and make those pitiful little, you know, small forest creature noises. This is one of those. I want to go to the phones really here in just a moment, but you got to hear a little more of this Dear Leader stuff. Again, long cuts, bear with me. This is Dear Leader talking, giving his opinion. This poor woman, and she's kind of, as German right-winger, she's kind of right-wing, but she's standing there and he's talking about her this way. Just play it.
Our job now is to work together. We've got big interests. Germany is a really important country. It's right in the heart of Europe. It's vital that Germany take the lead on a lot of issues.
Really and important country.
I look forward to working with the Chancellor on common objectives. And, you know, my first impressions that with 45 minutes alone in the Oval Office were incredibly positive. She's smart.
She's smart.
Capable.
Dang, she's a woman
kind of
and she's smart.
A spirit to her that is appealing. She loves freedom. I was particularly touched by hearing about her early life in communist Germany. There's something uplifting to talk to somebody who knows the difference between just talking about tyranny and living in freedom, and I actually done it. And so we're going to have a very good relationship, and that's important for our respective people. And I'm looking forward to consultations, visits, contacts, phone calls, all the things you do. And now I'm going to take her to lunch. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll give her a 4.2 because she's got a really cool beat and she dances well. Jesus! Okay, I tell you what, let's do go to the phones. Peter's with us from Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Well, that condescending, praying jackass, I'm telling you.
Do you know the difference between George Bush and a braying jackass? The braying jackass does.
Yeah, the wallpaper in the presidential bathroom is smarter than George Bush.
Oh, God, Peter, I mean, it just hurts to listen to the. I mean, I could write, you know, I could blog about quotes like that, but they stand on their own two feet, you know?
What are we, 6 years into the presidency, he's first, and he's just now getting around to meeting her?
Well, no, she was just recently elected.
Oh, I see.
She replaced Gerhard Schroeder.
I see.
But, you know, Germany is a really important country, and it's right in the middle of Europe.
Well, it is right. And I guess he probably just found that out.
He's a daggum.
You know, the reason I called the thing about the questioning of Alito, in my mind, there's just something wrong with the way that questioning went. The Democrats never really got to one of the fundamental issues, and it was in the back of my mind, there's just something wrong. And I got something today from Op-Ed News. It's an article by a fellow named Mencken, and he discusses, I guess, what's been, and he gave words to my unnamed feelings about it. And I think it's very important. You know, they talked about the unitary presidency, which is important. They talked about constitutional protection of privacy, important. They talked about the fact he didn't recuse himself from Vanguard, also important. His membership in the rich white folks KKK. At Princeton, et cetera, et cetera. But after a while, it was obvious that those things weren't going anywhere. But what they never talked about was the front burner issues of the religious right. You know, the front burner issues, what they're about to ram down our throats, it has to do with abortion and school prayer and religious symbols in public places and same-sex marriage and assisted suicide and cloning and intelligent design and on and on and on. These are all front burner issues.
Yeah.
They never asked that man about separation of church and state. I think it's outrageous.
Well, it is, and that's what I got real nervous, Peter, when I saw a press release from my own Senator Byrd, whom I have told, you know, in no uncertain terms, I expect him to vote against Alito. But he said, you know, early on, he said, I think Alito will make a fine justice because he understands how important religious life is in America.
Dear God, here are some of the questions that this man in the article suggests. They're very good questions. One of them is, please explain your understanding of the tradition of separation of church and state and how it applies to government activities and private religious interests. And do you believe that under the Constitution, Congress can pass laws that are rooted in religious dogma, are driven by religious motives? Excellent question. And a question, there are a number of religious leaders who claim that the United States is a Christian nation. How do you respond to that claim as a citizen and a federal judge? Not asked. Do you believe that the United States can ever be officially declared a Christian nation? If not, why? There are many, many, many questions in this article. And I thought, you know, Eureka! Yes, that's the missing piece. That's
but, you know, Peter, I think it got to the point with the Democrats, you know, those mean, mean Democrats. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
It got to the point with the, and I've seen lawyers do this in court settings as well, or in depositions and things like that. You'll ask questions, and you can't for the life of you get a straight answer. And after a while, you're the one who winds up getting worn down. You know, and we got the same thing with John Roberts, too, Peter. Don't forget this. You know, they'd ask him, you know, what is your feeling about, you know, pick an issue? And he'd say, well, you know, many people have many different opinions about, you know, screw that. I'm not asking you about many other people's opinions. I'm asking you about yours.
Oh, yeah.
But they were trained in, you know, these backroom, smoke-filled room strategery sessions where they literally woodshedded Alito to give him all the right answers and teach him how to deal with the people who were asking him questions. And you know, they cloak this all, Peter, inside this business about the canons of judicial ethics that say that you can't comment on a case that is presently before the court. Well, I don't want anybody to do that, but you know what? That doesn't mean that you cannot give your own personal views.
Absolutely. And, you know, he was coached this time by members of Congress, too.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham coached him, and therefore it doesn't surprise me that he was part of this cook job with Alito's wife.
Well, the thing about Alito's wife, you know, they did that with Clarence Thomas. Well, you know, they had his weeping wife sitting right behind him while he vehemently denied that he had ever touched that woman. And
yeah.
It's the same thing, different day, different, you know, it's sickening.
You know, shall we just take it from this that Republican women are a lot weaker than Democrat women?
Well, they're certainly a lot more cued and coached. That's
you know, and I mean no insult, no sexism generally, but you know, you got all these ballin' Republican women, whether it's Clarence Thomas's wife or Alito's wife, and you got all these upset Republican senators, and never a word for the military funerals, never a thought of Hillary, never a thought of what she went through.
No, never a thought.
You know, not a word for Chelsea when Rush Limbaugh was calling her the White House dog.
Oh, dear Lord, he did do that, I remember.
On his TV show, absolutely.
I remember those days. And the Clintons handled it with a lot of class. They handled it behind closed doors, always, that those things should be handled.
Yeah.
And it's not about that. You know, someone was saying today that, you know, tears are not, you don't do tears in football, you don't do tears in, you know.
There's no crying in Congress.
Right, in Congress, that's not part of the game. If you can't handle it, you just get out.
Yeah, but have you been over to Crooks and Liars yet?
No, I haven't.
You've got to see that video of him just stalking Alito, just turning around, stalking past her, leaving her about 10 feet in his wake.
Oh, really? I'll definitely check it out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all this concern for his wife, and, you know, the hearings are over and everybody's leaving, and he gets up to leave and just boom.
Yeah.
Gone by her. I mean, it's like, you know, she had her feet bound and was a little, you know, had to walk 10 paces behind the hubby.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If it had been real, he would have comforted the woman.
Yeah.
He didn't care anything about her.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, Ed Helms was just delightful last night on the Daily Show. He said that Alito's wife coming back just showed the power that that Talbots and a little bit of Xanax could have over a bunch of mean old Democrats.
Someone in the chat room earlier posted an interesting line. Back in the 60s, we used to to take LSD to make the world weird, and now we take Prozac to make it normal.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a great line. I think Blue and Mo posted that. I really got a kick out of it.
Yeah, I couldn't stand anything like that now. Life is weird enough as it is. It doesn't need any help.
Tell me about it. I can't take it. Fiction is we've got enough fiction just going on to the day-to-day news.
Hey, Peter, so good to hear from you.
You too, buddy.
Thanks.
A good evening.
You too, and a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. And a reminder, this was passed along by another listener during one of the breaks. Do not give up on these phone calls to your senators, to the Senate, regarding Alito. And with particular emphasis on Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Lincoln Chafee, I would add Chuck Hagel. This guy has presidential aspirations. But on our side, we need to install a little bit of spine in Ben Nelson from Nebraska. I think he's one of the ones who has said that there will be no filibuster of Alito. So remember that, senate.gov, you can look up the phone numbers of any senator you want to. Call and tell them you expect them to vote against him and to participate in a filibuster if the same is called for, because the Republicans are already bragging that they have sufficient votes to overturn, stop any filibuster that might be there. Let's forego the break here. Let's go to Jack in D.C. Jack?
Hey, Bob. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call the last time I called in. I thought I'd try and see if a second time's a charm, if you want to hear from one of your Republican listeners.
Well, fire away.
Well, I know that, normally most shows don't do this, but I had a good time the last time and thought I might, after that last call, which made me, have to take a few minutes to throw up before I called you.
Now that's just mean.
Well, I mean, look, this is what's on my mind, Bob. I have an issue with, some of the people calling our commander-in-chief an idiot. I mean, why be disrespectful?
Well, that's not disrespectful. That's calling. I mean, that's fact based. The guy's a moron, Jack.
This is a two-term president, which was elected by the majority of the people.
No historical revisionism, Jack. He was not elected by a majority of the people the first time he was elected. Now you know that to be true.
Well, the Supreme Court said precisely.
He was installed by the Supreme Court.
Now listen. If he's an idiot, and if he's an idiot and he was elected the first time, we say, oh, that was an accident. But to be elected the second time, that's because we're staying the course.
No. Have you done any reading at all, Jack? And I don't expect you to have done so, because you're on that side. Have you done any reading at all about the voting irregularities and the nightmares in Ohio?
Yeah. Oh yeah. We've read about plenty of those, Bob, which never.
They didn't
pass with anything.
They didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
So in Gahanna, Ohio, which had something on the order of maybe 600 registered voters altogether, and the electronic voting machines registered over 1,000 votes for George Bush, that didn't happen.
Ooh, okay. Take away 1,000 votes, we still win. But I mean, saying is correct. But this not. I mean, I don't even want to get on this. I'm just saying that if you guys think that our president wakes up day after day and all he wants to do is ruin our country. I mean, that's ridiculous. And what I wanted to bring up was this Supreme Court Justice Alito.
Go ahead.
I just can't imagine, people like Peter, the last car you had there. I mean, I was thinking, what planet is he from? Because I mean, finally, the Supreme Court is going to go back to where it was intended.
By whom? No, Jack. Now, Jack, stop. Wait. You can't just throw stuff out there and cruise on. You say the Supreme Court back to the way it was intended. Intended by whom? I mean, I want to know about these intentions.
Intended to interpret the laws of the land to make sure that the Constitution is, abided by, is taken care of.
Jack, have you ever read Marbury versus Madison?
Just what I heard during the hearing that I watched,
that establishes what the Supreme Court is. And the Supreme Court declared in and of itself that it would be the final arbiter of what is legal and not legal, what is constitutional, what is unconstitutional. Now, if you're telling me that all they can do is interpret, then you're telling me that you expect Alito and thugs like Thomas and Scalia and Roberts, that you expect them to overturn Marbury versus Madison, the very cornerstone of American jurisprudence.
Now you check this out right here. What I'm saying is, what I watched for 2 days was nothing but a Democrat dog and pony show. It was awful. It was awful to the point to where all it did was show ignorance on the part of some Democratic senators, trying to discredit him. This is the most qualified man in the last 60, 70 years to seek that office.
Well, then why didn't they nominate him first instead of Harriet Myers if he was so dadgum qualified?
That is a good question. Now, I'll agree with you on that. I think he should have been there. He should be the Chief Justice. That's how brilliant this man is. But what I want to tell you is I believe, with what I've heard, is how the liberal media has turned against...
You said liberal media.
I mean, why bring his wife into this?
No, wait, oh, stop it, Jack. No, Jack, doggone it.
Someone discredit his beliefs.
Jack.
Jack,
stop. Wait. Hey, stop. Now, wait a second. You said the liberal media, okay? Now, I don't know if you were listening last night, but I had clips from CNN, from CBS, and from NBC. In all of those, the question was put, now this is your liberal media, remember, and they were putting the question, have the Democrats crossed the line? Why did the Democrats make Mrs. Alito cry? Can you tell me, Jack, who was it that was questioning Judge Alito when she started bawling?
Actually, but what you're not listening to is what happened to cause it. If you watch those hearings and watch the repeat every time,
I've watched it,
and every time I have seen it, I noticed one thing: she was about to cry during the questioning, and what I'm saying is after finally Judge Alito starts being defended for his beliefs and his record. You know, they were going, let me tell you this, Bob. They were going back 30, 40 years. What was this? And what was this organization? And it's what, you know, is it a white supremacist? Is it anti-women? Is it anti, you know, this, and anti the separation group? Well, you know, my question, and it's in Senator Kennedy awakens from some kind of a slumber that he's in, and the thing that got me the most is he wants subpoena. Well, they get the subpoena, they check the records, there's nothing there. My question, and he can't seem to get the fact that the judge says, I can't remember what happened 30 years ago. I can't remember. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. You know, my big question right now is the fact of why, if his memory should be better. Why couldn't Senator Kennedy's be better about Chappaquiddick? I mean, do we need
No, Jack, stop. Were you in the Boy Scouts?
No.
So that's a bad example. Do you remember the name of any of your Sunday school teachers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Can
you remember your first grade teacher's name?
Yes.
Okay, that's so. Roughly, how long since you were in first grade?
39 years, 40 years.
40 years since you were in first grade, and you can still remember your first grade teacher's name.
Absolutely.
Now,
because she had an effect on my life.
Well, and at age 35, Alito couldn't remember joining an organization he had been in only 13 years before.
Let me get to the other point, Bob, and then I'm going to hang up because I appreciate your time.
It's okay, Jack, but you talk about liberal media and all of these buzzwords that I always hear from the confounded right, and it just destroys me because I know that there are people like you out there who actually believe this stuff.
Well,
I don't know how you can.
This whole hearing, the whole episode, showed the American public that When your party is in power, they'll become desperate. That's what this showed. It showed that instead of making simple statements, and like Peter said, asking real questions, I would have loved to hear Alito just lay it out. Because what's going to happen is once he's confirmed, he's going to lay it out. For instance, I believe that the word separation of church and state that doesn't appear in the Constitution, Alito is going to point that out. Separation, church, state, none of those words are in the First Amendment. The ACLU, the Anti-Christian Liberty Union, perhaps. You know, it would surprise me to see, you know, prayer again, reading the Bible again, you know, Ten Commandment displays as long as the government's not playing
and is that, you know, is that gonna,
not paying for it.
And why does
abortion,
that...
Abortion, limited, execution
limited,
is
it's,
limited unless there's DNA evidence. Since, I'm just saying that the conservative Supreme Court justice that will be confirmed will be in tune with the majority of the people in the United States and realize that the laws that we're under will affect. Now, here's the other thing. And this is where I'll end with what Peter mentioned, and this is what concerned me was, you know, he laid out the questions perfectly, and I wish they would have been answered. And I believe you probably heard the answer. Well, I can't address that because that could come up later. But the question is I believe with what Peter said, there is not one person that's going to run for office is going to stand up and say, you know, I am anti-Christian. I'm atheist. I'm agnostic. I'm going to run for office. Nobody's going to put that on their platform because they will not be elected by the majority of the people, period. It's an automatic, and I would...
Oh, now, I think I can agree with you to a certain extent there, Jack.
Happen.
Jack, nobody is going to stand, you know, even an agnostic or a deist like Jefferson made the appropriate bows and obsequies to religion when he was running for office. It was Jefferson who coined the term separation of church and state in the Danbury Baptist letter.
The reason why George Bush is our president today, and this is what I wish the Krafts would understand, the reason why he is president today is he ran on faith values. People believe that. We still do believe it. He promised that the Supreme Court nominations would be ones that he selected that would be conservative and able to hold.
But Jack, where is the faith value in lying to start a war?
That was bad information.
Bad information.
Bad intelligence. If a Democrat would have been in control, would have received the same intelligence, there's no reason to believe it would have been any different.
Okay. Where's the faith value in ignoring a presidential daily briefing entitled Osama bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S.? Where's the faith value in that?
I'm not familiar with that document.
That's the August 6th presidential daily briefing that Condoleezza Rice said they referred to as a historical document. August the 6th, 2001, he's on vacation again in Crawford. He gets a document entitled Osama bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S., and it mentions mentions hijacking aircraft, and they ignored it.
How many other intelligence reports were ignored, or maybe, you know, put a? I mean, if you, we could not
right, and I'm supposed to, and I'm supposed,
we knew,
and I'm supposed to trust this guy. I'm supposed to trust this guy to listen in on any phone conversation he wants inside the United States.
That's the other thing. Alito will uphold his presidential power to protect us.
But where now? Wait, you talk now, Jack. You talk about these presidential powers, and I know you need to go. But I got to ask, where is that presidential power to protect the United States inside the Constitution? Because I know all right wingers are strict constitutional constructionists. I need to know where the power to protect the people of the United States is in the Constitution.
His job is to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
In all parts.
Right. And tell me where in the Constitution it says the president shall protect the American people.
Well, it's not spelled out that way.
It doesn't say it at all. It's kind of like the right to privacy, isn't it?
That's why this is going to go to the Supreme Court. And when it's argued and laid out, the question is going to be if there is an imminent threat or what is believed to be an imminent threat, where do you draw the line? The Supreme Court will have the case, and we'll see how they rule. But I'm telling you, Bob, you know, I appreciate you really letting me vent a little bit.
No, that's okay. Oh, by the way, Agnes has a quick question for you.
Jack.
Yes.
I don't mean to be personal, but are you married?
Yes.
Okay. You say Alito is just the most brilliant man and should be confirmed, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Will be. And the Democrats were horrible and mean and vicious, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so when the man was leaving the hearing, he walks past his wife, leaves her in his wake. Quite a few people shuffle out behind him before she gets out. Now, wouldn't a loving husband who actually cares about what his wife is feeling and thinking stop, pull her to him, and take her out with him?
I don't know what was in his mind. Maybe he had to go to the bathroom. I don't know.
Did you see that?
But still, after having such an ordeal, as a husband, you are the man, and supposedly the women are the weaker sex.
Well, I don't believe that. I think we're equal, and you know.
But see, he doesn't.
But I don't believe that. I really don't think that is a value. I just believe that the Democrats. You know,
they ask questions that they would have asked of anyone.
They had 9,000 reviews to look at, and they could not find one thing other than Vanguard, which was a legitimate question. I agree with that. Vanguard was an issue. They asked questions.
How about Grudy? Was that an issue?
What was that?
Grudy, where he sanctioned the cops strip searching the little girl without a warrant.
That I didn't hear that part. I don't have a comment on that. But
okay. Well, what about the Perillo versus World Flavors? That's the one with the broom handle and the mentally challenged man in the workplace.
But see, the bottom line is how many of those cases that went to the Supreme Court from the appellate court was ever overturned.
Well, in the first place, in the case where he was willing to sanction the strip searching of the little girl, none other than Michael Chertoff was in the majority in saying he was wrong.
Oh, I don't think that. I mean, I don't think he's
this guy. You know, this guy. That's the thing, Jack. This guy has been nominated for being wrong.
He's the biggest
dissenter on the Third Circuit.
You watch. He'll be one of the greatest Supreme Court judges.
Jack, do you have any friends with disabilities?
Absolutely.
You do know that he said that Congress overreached in passing the Americans with Disability Act and the ADA should be struck down, don't you?
Again, Bob, I can't comment on these.
You're Alito. Jack, you're Alitoing me.
I take pride in my knowledge. I research what I'm comfortable with. And I just wanted to share and take a little, you know, I do listen, and mainly it encourages me in my party when I listen, because I know that we are on the right track, and I hope that through, you know, and really after the fact is when people will realize that, you know, that there is a party of light, there is a right party, and RIG.
Oh, wait, no, we're, no.
And hopefully people will come into that light.
Could you do me a favor, though?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Sure.
Take a look at some of his cases.
Yeah,
and you can read them. Read them for yourself.
They're online. Doe versus Grudy, Perillo versus World Flavors. There's another one out there where he sanctioned the cops shooting a fleeing 15-year-old African American boy in the back of the head. The kid wasn't armed.
We can look at everybody's case. You know,
well, we should. I mean, this is
that's the whole point. It doesn't matter.
A joke. I'm telling you that. Because his rating is so high, you'll see Democrats vote for him.
No.
I'm not going to hold out. You'll see them. I guarantee it.
They'll filibuster him.
No. I expect people like Lieberman to vote for him. Jack, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Bob, because I know, again, I know I listen to a lot of these political talk shows on the Internet, and you know, I haven't heard Peter's show. I don't have looked for Peter's show. But, you know, I listen to these, and I do call in occasionally. I don't call in to get in a yelling match. I just call in to try and bring another side of the conversation.
I know, and I so desperately want you to go and read. I mean, you know, you say that you can't comment.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right now. And, Bob, again, thank you very much for your time. Okay?
Well, thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. Anytime. I feel like I can almost get through to Jack if I could get him to stop with the talking points. You know what I mean? Let's go to Bruce. Hey, Bruce, you head on.
Hey, Bob. Good evening to you.
How you doing?
Oh, man. I just listened to this last exchange, and I got to tell you, you know, I mean, it's an uphill battle, my friend.
It is.
It's an uphill battle. And Jack, if you're listening, you know, I really, this is just, it amazes me that people can sit there and say, oh, he'll be the best Supreme Court justice ever.
How do we know?
And yet he hasn't ever read any of his cases. How could anyone say that? That makes no sense to me.
Well, but, you know, I could be making a false assertion here, Bruce. But, you know, how do they know? They were told on Sunday, Justice Sunday. They were told by Robertson and Falwell and Dobson, and those good, godly, upstanding men certainly wouldn't lie. They have no, you know, they've got no impetus to lie about him now, do they?
Essex comes to mind, perhaps. it just amazes me, Bob. I wanted to call in and comment on that mainly just because, you know, opposite world.
Yeah.
As we say on Fourth Estate, there are people in this nation who, as long as they are a member of the majority cult party, whatever it is, will do and say anything right along with whatever's going on. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, myself, I'm not a big fan of people like Lieberman or, you know, what's that other one? I keep forgetting his name. Biden. That's it.
Yeah.
We talked about him last night.
Yeah.
You know, but the reality is that, as I said to you yesterday, if this guy gets in, you know, we might as well write off the Constitution.
Well, yeah. It's been under attack. But when you've got, and, you know, this John Yoo, who wrote the whole torture justification thing and is the progenitor of this unitary presidency theory, wrote a book. It's out there. It's available. And honest to God, and we touched on it some last night, they think that the president has any power that is not specific, that they can dream up. If it doesn't say thou shalt not specifically, then the president has that power. And see, this is where you run into the sort of conflicting, paradoxical nature of Republican thinking, Bruce, because on the one hand, they say that there's no enumerated right to privacy in the Constitution and that, therefore, Roe versus Wade and Griswold versus Connecticut should be struck down. And yet, at the same time, there's no enumerated right of the president to make war. But because of the unitary presidency, it's there by, like, what? Magic.
Yeah. Well, that's just it, is that there's so many hypocritical actions that have been taken by this administration, it amazes me. I have a question for Jack, and I would love for Jack to call back sometime and answer this question. What is the faith-based value of torturing people? Okay?
Yeah.
What is the faith-based value of waging war, period?
What's the faith-based value of having a concentration camp?
Ah, there we go. Or several.
It goes on and on. I mean, these, somebody sent me this link, I think it was from the Hartman Room last night. Bush to criminalize protesters under Patriot Act as disruptors.
Yes. Yes.
Where's the faith-based value in that? Yeah, but again, if you want a faith-based nation, you want to be Iran. The Falwells, the Dobsons, the Robertsons, the people that listen to them, they want to be Iran, only calling themselves Christians.
Well, and this guy, Alito, I'll tell you, if there ever were a shill for the government.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so we said last night, Roberts is the corporate guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Alito's the government guy. And then you have Scalia and Thomas up there who
are just crazy.
Who are just lunatics, complete freaking lunatics.
You know, people think I'm over the top when I say that that all American social programs are at risk with this guy. Because if you can look at the Americans with Disabilities Act and say that that's congressional overreaching and that it should be struck down, if you can do that, you can do it with anything.
With anything, absolutely.
You know, oh, Congress overreached with Medicare. Gone.
Congress overreached with the McKinney Act, which is the single federal law that authorizes that homeless programs be funded, you know, to the tune of $1.1 billion a year. You know.
Yeah.
Basically shut down all the shelters.
These people, and there are reams and, like I said, volumes and volumes of so-called conservative thought, talking about how illegal and unconstitutional. Well, let's see. How about the Department of Education? They've publicly said that that should be struck down. How about the Environmental Protection Agency? Who was it that called that a terrorist organization at one point? Some Republican. It goes on and on and on. They want to... Well, you know, and finally, you get down, Bruce, you get back to Grover Norquist and the idea that, you know, we want to weaken the government so much that we can drown it in a bathtub.
Well, and you know what kills me is that they say that, and then they create stuff like the Department of Homeland Security, okay?
Yeah.
And here's the paradox that you were talking about earlier, is that while on the one hand, they say, we got to get government out of our lives, we got to make government smaller, we got to do this, that's all a lie. It's all a lie. And the reason why it's all a lie is because they turn around and create bureaucracies that carry out their plans.
Now, I know, you know, I know that you work with some veterans.
Right.
Well, this from USA Today. Instead, you know, instead of giving adequate funding to the Veterans Administration, guess what?
What's that?
The Pentagon has a program now that is telling veterans' families to laugh.
Telling them to do what?
Laugh. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Scott, 57, James Scotty Scott, a retired Army colonel, is certified as a laughter training specialist.
Laughter training, but they need to listen to Fourth Estate Radio.
You guys laugh some. It touts scientific research that suggests chuckling can boost the body's immune system and decrease stress hormones.
So
and
this is the
this did not come from the Onion, Bruce.
This is the 2000s answer to PTSD, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's the answer to everything. You know, when your kid comes home blown all to bits in a cardboard box unloaded by a forklift, and laugh.
They'll bring you the laughter counselor over so that you can laugh with the corpse.
Right. You know, take my wife, please.
Those bastards. Bob, those bastards.
Yeah. Just absolutely bastards. You're absolutely right. Bruce, thanks so much, man.
All right, man. Listen, you have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday.
All right, and Fourth Estate Radio, 10 o'clock Saturday night, right?
That's right.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Night.
And let's take a quick break. And when we come back, laughter. Your tax dollars are going to fund laughter counselors instead of real veteran services. Thanks, George. Thanks so much.
And this is for you, Jack.
The things you want to feel, I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Till you wake up on your own, I wonder where you are, live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80%
of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in him. You know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts. 100 flights aboard company jets. 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels. $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Welcome back. About 11 minutes left in the show. So let's do a little bit more sound before we roll on out of here, because now you've heard the idiot speak. Let's see. I would be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to hear what a real Democrat sounds like. Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Judge Alito ruled in support of spousal notification. In essence, he is comfortable putting a woman's constitutional right to make decisions about her body in the hands of her spouse as soon as she signs her marriage license. This blatant disregard for individual rights is why our founding fathers designed a meaningful system of checks and balances. And once any branch of government surrenders itself to the others, that authority is difficult to regain.
That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Congresswoman from South Florida, sounding like what a Democrat sounds like. She testified before the Senate committee today. And in case you're wondering, she's talking about Planned Parenthood versus Casey, where Alito ruled that a woman had to ask her husband's permission to make medical decisions about her own body. Yeah. Now, one more from Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Can America risk Justice Alito, a Supreme Court Justice Alito, casting the deciding vote to drag us through another tragic saga similar to the Terri Schiavo case? I don't think America can endure another Terri Schiavo case. In another disturbing privacy matter, Judge Alito's lack of judgment, I believe, was appalling. In this case, a police officer strip-searched a 10-year-old girl and her mother. They were not named in the search warrant. They were simply on the premises. According to the Boston Globe, the 10-year-old girl's lawyer later reported Judge Alito as saying, "Why do you keep bringing up the fact that this case involves the strip search of a 10-year-old child?" Why? Because this was not a simple case of whether or not the officers exceeded their investigative authority. It escalated to an unconscionable level. Judge Alito was the only member of a 3-judge panel who found the strip search of the 10-year-old acceptable under his interpretation of the law. Now, I am horrified that someone could strip search my children because of selective interpretation of a warrant. And as you consider this nomination, I ask you to reflect. Would you be comfortable if your own child was the subject of a strip search? Based on his record, would you be comfortable if your little girl was the plaintiff with Justice Alito as the deciding vote?
Now, that should give you nightmares. Can you imagine? Yeah. Agnes, I hope you'll forgive me if I say that I think I've got a little crush on Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
That's okay.
Okay. Where was that kind of questioning? The Democrats were so damn mean, but we didn't manage to do any of that? Where was that questioning? I watched it day in, day out. Okay, some I missed. But I never heard anything even remotely approaching that. How about it, Judge Alito? If the cops wanna feel up your daughter and call it a strip search, is that okay? Honey, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but could you get the cat out of here, please? I was trying to carry on a conversation.
Toby, can you?
Thank you.
Sorry.
Why are we going to let these people just roll over us? I don't... our friend Sue writes in and says, Gonzalez, Alberto Gonzalez, was on CNN today saying he would support all the way Bush's right to wiretap anyone he wants to because he's president. You're gonna keep hearing more about this unitary presidency. And it's high-blown, highfalutin language for tyrant. It is synonymous with dictator. I mean, for God's sakes, if the president can do anything he wants to as long as he says it's for national security, we're done. It's not a republic anymore, and he is an emperor. Let's see. It turns out that the NSA spying was going on before September the 11th. Really? That should just make you want to scream. Before September 11th, the NSA spying program was underway. These people had an agenda from the moment they began contemplating running this little moron for office. Nanette writes in, I think Jack has selective knowledge. He doesn't seem to know very much about the man that he thinks is so great. It amazes me that the right ignores such things as the sodomy of the mentally impaired man or the strip search of a 10-year-old girl. Sometimes I'm sickened by the blindness that they all seem to have. It certainly doesn't bode well for the future of our country. No, no, it doesn't. And she adds, oh, God, Bob, we can't take any more Bush. Talking about my sound bites. Even the dog rolled over and covered his ears. Lord, how stupid can a human being be? Are we sure he's human? I'm not sure at all. I think he's a pod person. No, pod people are probably smarter. Well, that's it. What a weird little show this has been. I apologize. It will be better on Monday. If we can just keep the cats from crawling around all over me and distracting the heck out of me, we'll be better. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. The show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerbway is the engineer who set up this marvelous studio. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream and the archives of this and many other wonderful liberal programs, and he never sends a bill, so by all means, do the right thing by Ben. Many thanks to our friends at RadioPower.org for carrying the show Tuesday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. We truly do appreciate that as well. Don't forget to catch 4th Estate Radio, 10 o'clock Saturday night. All Things Reconsidered, 10 o'clock Sunday night. 4thEstateRadio.com. and allthingsreconsidered.org. And the show is brought to you, of course, every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they are building the American dream. And always, always, RMR, it's all for you.